Gadadhara Pandit's appearance day, this is Amavasya. Amavasya means the, what, dark moon night, when there is less light. So, lots of people are born on every day around the world, but their births have no significant spiritual meaning. They are simply born under their karma. And that's not given any particular importance. Many people are born on Janmashtami. Many people are born on Gaura Purnima. I'm sure the day that Mahaprabhu was born, people were born all over the world. But that has, maybe there's some good fortune. They lived in the time of Mahaprabhu, but they may have been born in a jungle in Africa also. So we don't give any spiritual significance to the birth of the conditioned soul. There's nothing special about his birth. It is simply going on under the laws of material nature. And some have some fortune born along with their birth, and mostly not. They don't. But Mahaprabhu, the personality of Godhead, his associates, great devotees, etc., their births are not just according to karma. In fact, in most cases, they're not according to karma at all. They are only according to divine arrangements, spiritual, divine, and Krishna conscious arrangements. So, therefore, the stage of the moon, the particular day in relation to Krishna's lila, these things have a parallel bearing on their position as a devotee or their pastime in relation to the Supreme Lord. So in Vedic society, the lunar is giving more importance than the solar. In most other cultures in the world, let's say, not all, but just in general around the world, Aborigines and all these cultures we read about, the Incas, the Mayas, the Aztecs, and the Romans, and they're all gone all over the world. They give more importance to the sun. And in some cases, there may be something they're showing importance to the moon, because they are seeing that the sun, and which is important, the sun. I mean, where would we be without the sun? But in Vedic society, higher importance is given to subtle things. So the moon has a subtle control over the mind, water, bodies of water, this body being 98% water. The moon has a control over the body, over the mind. The planet is mostly covered by water. The moon controls the tides, has a control over that. The moon controls the growth of vegetables, the growth of plants. So many things are subtly controlled by the moon. And these other cultures, they didn't have the knowledge to understand that the higher you go, the subtler it is. In their vision, the sun is everything. It is dark without sun, and that's true. Krishna is manifest as the sun in the universal form. Surya Narayan, we tell, like this. But you have sun and you have moon. You know, which one is given the higher position? Well, in Vedic culture, the moon is given the higher position. And one's birth, astrologically, the phase of the moon is taken into consideration. Not so much the phase of the sun. What's the phase of the sun? Morning, noon, and night. Different muhurtas of the day, time. And there's winter solstice, summer solstice. There are some things. It's not like out, you understand? But it's not in as much as the moon is. So I don't know what time of the day Gadadhara Pandit appeared today, but as I said, he appeared on this day, and this is the Amavasya. And the Amavasya is the moon in its darkest position. There's less light from the moon now than in any other night of the lunar month. And it's going through the cycle. So this has got a strong bearing on the spiritual mind of Gadadhar. Not that the moon is not controlling his mind, but they are in parallel. His appearance is divinely arranged that he appears at this time. He has a very withdrawn type of mentality. Withdrawn means he is not aggressive, means he is not assertive. He is very cooperative. And with who? With the wishes, with the desires of Mahaprabhu. He is the most surrendered to Mahaprabhu. And ontologically speaking, it has to be such because he is Srimati Radharani. He represents that aspect, Radharani, particular aspect of Radharani. What aspect? The most submissive aspect of Radharani is represented in Gadadhar Pandit. Radharani has different moods, just like any of us. We're not just one-mooded people. We have different moods. Most people don't like my mood when I get angry. I also don't like it. It gets scary sometimes. But this world does not move on one mood. Nothing does. If anything is all one mood, then that's not so dynamic. That's very boring, like that fellow's face we're seeing on that film. Oh, man, that guy needs a personality upgrade. Such a monotone face, walking, just monotone mood. Well, Radharani has many moods. And submissive to Krishna is one of them. But she can also be, argumentative. She can also be stubborn or resistant. Radharani has many moods, and Krishna finds this most charming in their lila, many moods. So it is said that Krishna acquires most of those moods, and the one of total submission, it kind of just leaves behind. And then that mood appears as Gadadhar. You follow that? We've read some of those things. So in this position where the moon is giving less light, everything is subdued, then Gadadhar Pandit appears at that time. His personality matches that. He does not stand out to those who cannot see him. But for those who have the divine eye, Gadadhar is considered to be the topmost devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, you'll find many times, topmost devotee, topmost devotee, topmost devotee. This is also an expression. I don't know what that is in Bengali. Mahabhagavat or something like that, meaning topmost devotee. Maha means greatest devotee. Still within the ranks of the greatest devotees, like the Mahajans, those who know devotional service, none of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates are directly mentioned. There's 12 Mahajans. Giri, they are, there's not many some Mahajans, Prahlad's Mahajan, and Bhishma's Mahajan. And a lot of these devotees, the great Mahajans, they know the essence of devotional service, but they're not Braj devotees. They're not from Vrindavan. So we do assume that Prahlad is greater than Radharani? No. To the general plane of awareness in Vaishnavism, yes, he is. Take that argument to the Shris, and yes, of course, Prahlad is greater. Take that to the Madhvas, of course, Prahlad is greater. Because they have an awareness of one of the major levels of transcendence, Vaikuntha plane. But they don't have access to Goloka. And what is generally said in the scriptures, which is catchable by most people, is that like Vaikuntha plane. Everything after that requires admission tickets, special admission tickets. To go beyond Vaikuntha is not an easy task. To reach Vaikuntha itself is not an easy task. And then to go beyond Vaikuntha, when you say that to a Sri Vaishnava, I mean, he might smile and say, but inside he's thinking, you're puggled. You're completely crazy. How you can go beyond Narayan? What exists beyond Narayan? Well, the tapasya of Lakshmi, the austerity performed by Lakshmi raises that question. For why is she performing austerity? She's already serving the lotus feet of Narayan. She is already the eternal consort. Then what need is there to arise? She will rise to what? What she will rise to? Tapasya is performed for the purpose of rising above any present situation. People are suffering materially. Do tapasya. Those are suffering from ulcers. They may do fasting or the blood sugar and all that. There's some austerity to what? Get above it. You don't perform austerities to go down. Oh, I want to go down. Let me do some austerity. There's no austerity to go down. Austerity is to go up. So why she does austerity? Go up where? That raises this question, a very difficult question for that community, for those thinkers. Vaikuntha thingers, to go where? Above what? Above Vaikuntha is not possible. So this raises a particular difficult question for you. According to your sampradaya, you have a certain access. Beyond your sampradaya, you don't have an access. It's as simple as that. Mayavadis have an access to Brahman, who are real Mayavadis, Shankarites. In the line, they have access, and their mantras and all, they have access to Brahmajyoti, not Vaikuntha. They cannot understand what is Vaikuntha. They don't know what is Vaikuntha. They consider it something lower. Similarly, the Vaikuntha devotees consider Goloka as something lower. Well, Narayan, sometimes he just has this mood, and they can't really explain why he has this mood, and he becomes like, plays like Krishna. Just something lower. It's sweet. They recognize it has its certain sweetness, but, you know, don't forget who he actually is. But we're just the opposite. We're like, don't forget who he actually is. So they see Krishna as downward, we see Krishna as upward. And so one cannot enter in a higher plane unless he has an access there, visa there. He has some special permit to enter there. So once entering Vrindavan plane, it is not like all done in one. There's gradations of rasa. All rasa is not the same. All are glorified. They're all superior to the Vaikuntha rasa. But this type of superiority is not like mundane superiority. You are down. Actually, if you get to Vaikuntha, you'll never want to leave. It is such a wonderful place. Even once Bhaktisiddhanta has described Brahmajyoti, Brahman. Now, Brahman. But what is Brahman? Brahman is the glow of Krishna, the glow of God. If you get to that, you may never want to go anywhere else. That is so fabulous, so unbelievably wonderful and accommodating. It is not that it's some prickly thing like rubbing a cactus or having some police flashlight in your face or a tube light flashing on you. It is not like that. It is this wonderful, blissful, transcendental light coming from the body of the Supreme Person. It is so encompassing that jivas get lost in there for a long, long time. Only Krishna's grace makes them come out, actually, because there is something better than just that. That accommodation of the light of God. But he describes it in one or two places in his writings where it's like, if you just read that, you say, oh, stop this Mayavad reading. It's glorification of Brahman. We don't tolerate. And who wrote it? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So we don't forget that it is transcendental and it is the plane of absolute truth and it does come from the body of Krishna. So it is not some mundane, hateable thing. The forgetfulness of Krishna, that we don't want to accept that. Therefore, devotees don't even accept that. If suddenly Krishna said, I offer you Brahman, the warmth of my bodily glow, and you'll be lost there in my glowing embrace, no thank you. Devotees have this intelligence. No thank you. They'll decline the opportunity. It's no service to Krishna. It's all self-gaining. You will gain something, right? And ultimately, that's not self-fulfilling. Because as servants of Krishna, without service, all living entities ultimately suffer. So in the Brahmajyoti, ultimately, the ultimate peace is not there. Because there's no service there, they fall down out of the Brahmajyoti and they enter the material world, not Vaikuntha. They enter the material world. They can't go to Vaikuntha because there's no qualification of service. So the only place to come is here, where they can begin to qualify for service. You follow? So all the planes of transcendence are very accommodating to the living entities. So there are gradations in each one. In Goloka Vrindavan, there are gradations of service, and groups of servitors are there, and even competitive groups of servitors are there. Quite elaborate, quite extensive, quite on the infinite level, competition, competitive servitors, all arranged in the Leela of Krishna by Yoga Maya through the various expansions of Krishna's energies. And everyone there is not knowing, oh, actually this competitive sector actually is no real competition at all. We don't really have to worry. Our camp is beyond breach, beyond competitive challenges. So where's the fun? It's like an actor. What happens to really good actors? They get lost sometimes in the personalities they portray. In other words, if you're not really into it, we can see you're just acting, and it's not a good drama. When you can give the facial expressions and everything completely suiting the role you play, that means you've really just like, you've left your family problems behind, how much you're getting paid, you're so into it, you just adopt the role. But still, you're simply acting. Well, the Leela Krishna is way more intense than that. They adopt the role and completely forget anything else. It doesn't exist. They're in the competitive camps. They are competing for the service of Krishna. And those who are actually in the higher position, they're not thinking, anyway, I'm in the higher position, their competition doesn't matter. No, they meet that competition head on. Now, they don't have wars with tulwars and throwing rocks at each other and all this, but they have their deceitful practices, their deceptions, their trickery. All these things are there in competitive service. Ultimately, everyone trying to serve Krishna better. We can't even actually comprehend it, how it is. But it's for real. It's a drama that is for real. Just like, this is a drama. There's nothing real here. If I stick with the pin, why do you shout? There's nothing is real. Oh, sorry. Don't do that again. I'll hit you with a stick. Hare Krishna. Ah, welcome. Jai Titanida. Haribo. Come and have a seat. It's real, so real. Come to the side, have a seat. It's a little crowded, but the sun shines there. Have a seat. It's so real. yet we are told, and by all intelligent understanding, we understand actually this world is not real. The pleasure, the pain, this is all due to the conditioning of Mahamaya. Well, their conditioning is Yogamaya. It is even more real than what we find here. With an active intelligence, you can understand that you're not the body. That active intelligence is rarely manifest in the spiritual world. First off, there, you are the body. It's a peculiar situation. We spend our life, you know, grabbing this idea, I'm not this body. And if we're ultimately successful, then we become the body in the spiritual world. There are no embodied souls. So here there can be an active intelligence where you can realize, no, I'm not this body. You can separate, my intelligence is here in the background. My mind is so much up here in the front. My senses are not independent. And you can, you know, you can be introspective and you can find the soul directly through that, like, Sankhya process. You can come down to recognize the soul. What part of me is the soul? And then if you're more advanced in meditation, you can recognize the super soul within. All that can be done by acts of intelligence and a particular process. And even devotion can be recognized by our intelligence. So we can, in that way, we come to a stage of understanding what this world is not. You see? But nobody has that intelligence that in the Leela of Krishna, they understand that Krishna is not in some danger. Only Balaram has this, actually. Lord Balaram, he knows that Krishna is actually never in danger. But there isn't any situation where Krishna is entering the Agasura demon's mouth, and right in the middle of it, then Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yasoda goes, well, you know, actually, Krishna is God, and he's not in any danger. They're not given that intelligence there. They are fainting, beating their heads, screaming, ready to die themselves. It is said that if Krishna is even perspiring, Mother Yasoda is ready to embrace death. But she can't die. But she doesn't think, well, I'm ready to embrace death. But actually, I can't die. But I'm ready to embrace death. That's an actor. And that you can come to on this level. I'm acting as this body, but I know I'm not this body. There it is, real beyond real. There is no escape there. They're totally locked in there, 100%. And even sometimes Balaram, he doesn't catch the drift of the Leela. Very, very rarely. But there are some examples. Only Lord Balaram. Because Yogamaya is basically his energy. So then, if it's his energy, then he's naturally aloof from that energy and can perceive, but no one else can. Everybody is completely into that there. At the same time, ultimately, because it is Vaikuntha, because it is above Vaikuntha, it comes to harmony. There is harmony. Not that there is competition at every step. ultimately the competition comes to harmony and the competition surrenders. Mm-hmm. And there are the ultimate victorious camps in Krishna's service. Mm-hmm. So, in relation to this world, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, amongst Vaishnavism, is the ultimate victorious camp of the servitors of Mahaprabhu, of the Supreme Lord, which means of Mahaprabhu, his camp. It is ultimately victorious. It is said that in this age of Kali Yuga, all other sampradayas, they will, in due course, now, later, in between, they will diminish. And eventually, there will be recognized only one sampradaya. And within that sampradaya, one thing will be recognized as the religious principle. And that is? Chanting the holy name. I was telling Mata Maharaj after one very frustrating week of discussing with high politicians in Karnataka about wonderful projects to benefit all of humanity, and then within 1 week entering so deep into the thing, being at dinner with them, riding in their vehicles with them, the whole, and coming out the other end, oh, it's not possible to do that. I realized that there's only one thing that matters in everything we do, and that's chanting of the holy name. At least that was my week's realization. The money we make, the other things we do, are all subservient to this one thing of spreading the holy name of Krishna. Whether the person is a vegetarian or a non-vegetarian, whether they're a Mayavadi, wherever they are, the first and foremost religious principle in this age is to spread the holy name of Krishna and encourage that wherever it is. Of course, we know if sincerity is there, then all the good things follow. We don't have to focus on the good things, ultimately. But we find that we do. We still go and try to do so many things to give opportunity for the holy name of Krishna. I mean, we had designed for their approval a 600 crore project, and behind it all, simply we want to progress the holy name of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. But in order to do that, there was even a space aquarium, a fish aquarium. There was a sky needle. There were all these mundane attractions which are sucking in the world all over the place, and that's why ashrams are empty. The parking lot of Wonderlaw is not empty now. It's starting to fill up with tour buses. And the big famous temples like Tirupati and others, yes. But thousands of other temples and ashrams, there's nobody there but a bored to death pujari. So we recognize the maya, and then how to capture the maya and situate it in such a way that it pulls people opposite. But our whole thing, it's all a scam. It's all a trick. Even sannyas, Mahaprabhu is a trick. He tricked them. He took sannyas. Even our sannyas. I've heard the greatest Gaudiya Vaishnava sannyasis laugh and say, actually, it's a scam. We're scamming. Because Mahaprabhu taught, this is not what we are. And he rejected Varnashram. But because in certain societies, and actually all societies, they don't know what a sannyas, say in Rome, that they know it as a monk. They know it as renunciation. They know it as celibacy. They still respect these things in some cultured circles around the world. People respect the father, the preacher, the padre, the papa, the monk. They respect these things. And in India especially, this has been the story for a long, long time. Although that also is going down because there's so many charlatans. I've been asked so many times, Swami, you have family? I'm like, no, Swami. You know, yes, but where your wife and children are there? They rather expect you will have wife and children or you'll have a few bastards under your control. Some illegitimate children. Because there's so many of these Swamis that pop up and go away, they're just woman hunters. And some of these mutts, actually, they have their concubines and they have their illegitimate children. They say even up to Ashtamut is there. In Udupi, these things. People on one side now show a facade. Mata Maharaj has encountered many people in high society in Bangalore, and they had, Swami, I have so many doubts about these Swamis. Because they have so much experience with the Bollywood Swamis, or even they're just getting it through the movies, you know. The Swamis in the movies are usually not saints. They're always, you know, there's some Swami, and he's mafia, and he's doing nonsense. And the films are even giving people what is an impression. Or a Swami's a giggling idiot. He's just some laughing fool. So many of the people are under the sway of misinformation. But Mahaprabhu accepted that, and his vision must be beyond his present time, because that is not what an avatar does. He doesn't do something just for that particular time, place, and circumstance. This is something which is, I think, is misunderstood. Acharyas preach according to time, place, and circumstance. But when an avatar comes, they do something with lasting value. They show something. It's not just for a decade or two or that last half of a century. They show something which goes the length of, well, in Mahaprabhu's case, the Yuga, for the Yuga Dharma. And he did accept sannyas. And Vaishnavas after that never accepted sannyas. Almost never. Few limited cases until the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And he understood this. They also never gave Brahmin initiation to anybody outside of a Brahmin caste. But he understood this. That this should be done. So the Acharyas make adjustments, and another Acharya may come and make an adjustment after that. That happens. But what an avatar gives, that is much longer lasting. Do you follow what I'm saying, my point? Many people have suggested, no, sannyas is not for this age. Actually, Mahaprabhu just took sannyas because, you know, we've seen it different times all over the internet. People begging the issue. Prabhupada disciples begging the issue why they will never have to take sannyas. You know? Or somebody begging the issue why he gave up sannyas. Well, this is all the tricks of the mind. This is not the standard. This is not the standard. Mahaprabhu has given the sannyas ashram. It appears in his lila, and it has a far-reaching effect into this Kali Yuga. And Bhaktisiddhanta made that very, very clear of its value. For the preaching mission. Just for our own spiritual advancement, it may not be required. For some, it should be there, and others, it's not required at all. Overall, it's not required at all. For our own spiritual advancement, what is required is the holy name of Krishna. It does not supersede what is the ultimate and singular religious principle in Mahaprabhu's mission. It doesn't take a precedence over that. You see, but it furthers that. For some of us, it will further that. For others, it will crash us down. So it should be a very serious decision. Some people mistake me, but I think every one of my godbrothers over 50 should take sannyas. And I'd be like, whoa, no, certainly not. In fact, probably the ones under 30 would be better sannyasis right now. A bunch of you old men joining the ashram. Who cares? Just eat your bodies. When you're young, you can preach. You can do something. When you're old, you've got aching knees, and you need this, and you need that. And it's like, Mahaprabhu also showed that. He didn't wait till he was old. He took sannyas when he was young. So, it is not the sannyas of the Vedas. It is something else. It is for the preaching of the Sankirtan movement that we have sannyasis. It is not an old man's institution. Although older sannyasis, they also welcome. But that everyone, even Prabhupada said, yes, everyone over 50, it is, what do you say? Obligatory. Mm-hmm. Obligatory. That English word obligatory, you can't go 1 millimeter left or right. You are stuck on the narrowest, straightest, this is it. You have no other choice. That's your road. He said, it is obligatory. Well, what does that mean? Well, if you want even 1% to take sannyas, then you preach it as obligatory to everyone. Then out of that, you'll get like maybe 1%. If you say, well, most people don't actually have to take sannyas, holy name is everything, you'll get zero sannyasis. That's just the nature of the world. They have a thing, they have what they call shoot the rhinoceros. You're not going to get it. So in the end, we're not going to get 200 acres and 600 crores. We're probably going to get 10 acres and something else, right? But if I shoot for 10, I might get 3, right? So there's this thing, and if you do get higher than you want, well, okay. And if it fails, no one will fault you. And most of the time, you know, if you shoot an arrow straight at somebody, unless it's very, very close, it'll never hit them. You have to come up and shoot and hit the target. You have to aim high, especially for big things that are far, that are beyond just an easy reach. Aim high. Aim at a higher target, and then you can hit. You know, you can have a level of success. So preaching is like that. I mean, one time Prabhupada told the sannyasi's duties to every day preach against sex life. He said, because if he doesn't do this, society will just fall down to the lowest level. So there are certain things that are said, and like Prabhupada said, I want an army of 100 sannyasis. Well, that's when I decided to become a sannyasi. He wants 100 sannyasis. So I like to become one and join his army. With all we were worth, with the whatever could come, only 57. 58? 57 or 58 came forward in 12 years. That's with his trying, our aspiring, and everything in between, only 57 could come out. He said, I want 100. But if he would have reached 100, do you think he said, okay, I have 100 now closed? No. It's like, how many people in olden times in India had 64,000 disciples? Ramanuja defeated 64,000. James. Prakasananda had 64,000 disciples defeated by Mahaprabhu. And you go on and on and on, and you find that there are so many people who had 64,000 disciples. Well, this seems quite unique. So, did they actually have 64,000, or did they just have a lot? Oh, you should have been to the last festival. There's a million devotees here. Was there really a million? No, there was like somewhere almost 100, right? It seemed like a million devotees here. It's an expression, you know? I mean, I've told that guy 1,000 times not to do that. You say about your worker, some construction worker. I told that guy 1,000 times not to do that. Did you really tell him 1,000 times? Or is that an expression that you've told him more than once? Many times more than once, right? So we have expressions. And the Vaishnavas are not without expressions. Of course, there is a literalist. He takes it literally. Therefore, Prakasananda has 64,000 disciples. But it's highly unlikely. Or just there's this weird phenomena that all these rishis and all these jains and all these lamas, they all had 64,000 disciples. Who knows in future what someone may write? They may write a Bengali or Kannada or Sanskrit glorification of Prabhupada, and it may come to that level. They would say 64,000 temples or 64,000 mosques. There is what is called poetic embellishment, poetic expression. And Vaishnavas are poetic. So the scripture has this, right? This has this also. But it has its realism also. And how to separate what is a poetic embellishment and what is its definite realism, that is not so easy, and neither do we want to attempt the scripture in that way and ascertain everything. What's the most real? What's the most poetic? You generally find two types of Vaishnavas. One who just follows it. It says it, therefore it is, and that's it. That's how many disciples he had, and they go on. And another class, which is a little more accommodating. Both run a danger. One is quite fanatical and runs the risk of becoming quite dogmatic about spiritual life. The other one is a little more understanding, runs a list of too much liberality. Sahajism enters, so many things. We see there, Ganadhar Pandit accepted Kshetra Sannyas. Kshetra Sannyas. Kshetra Sannyas, compared to other sannyas, is like, it's not even sannyas. I mean, it's like Kshetra Sannyas. You hardly ever even hear the word. There's no change of dress. Practically, there's nothing other than just the vows staying in one place, the dham. Whatever vows are made in spiritual life, and even in material life, they should be kept. Particularly in spiritual life, they should be kept. Unless they're made unaware of so many things, and they were made prematurely or by a neophyte, and then they can be adjusted. But the principle is, vows should be kept. So, here in this particular place, the Lord attempts to go to Vrindavan. When he's leaving Puri, Gadadhar Pandit wanted to follow him. Mahaprabhu forbid him to follow. He said, no, this will break your Kshetra Sannyas. And in all the types of sannyas, like I say, Kshetra Sannyas is, it's not like some really, really intense sannyas that the whole world is looking at. That if you did, you know, creep out of Puri and go to Alanath, or, you know, go up to Mayapur and come back, people would go broom you out, Vantasi, Vantasi. The Vantasi part comes about women. Those who enter sannyas and then go back and mix with women, this is not acceptable. as a standard. So Mahaprabhu was so strict with Gadadhar Pandit, he wouldn't allow him to leave Puri and accompany him. But there's a class of devotees today, they want to say that Nityananda, he accepted like paka sannyas, like full-fledged orange cloth sannyas from Lakshmipati Tirtha, and then Mahaprabhu told him later, you marry. And he gave up that paka sannyas and ekadanda and threw everything somewhere in a river and entered grihastha life. This is not a good position, especially when our acharyas like Bhakti Siddhanta and his disciples and Bhakti Vinod and this clan, they say no. Nityananda was never a sannyasi. He was an avadut. I mean, avadut means he's not a sannyasi, he's not a brahmachari, he's not a grihastha, he's an avadut. This is a problem. The avadutes are a problem. The society cannot understand the avadutes. So then Mahaprabhu wanted to regulate Nityananda for the benefit of society. He said, look, you become a householder and you preach in Bengal, you see. And any of your eccentricities, this is not going to adversely affect. But people taking you as maybe as a sannyasi and your activities, he's showing up in the marketplace riding a horse completely naked. And Nityananda had no social etiquettes, what do you call conjunctions?
Conventions.
That's avadhu. He was fully avadhu. Now the avadhu, people look at the avadhu, they think you're crazy, pagal, nonsense, they don't know. Avadhu can smoke, avadhu can drink. So Mahaprabhu's like, let's cool down here, Lord Balaram. You be cool, you be a householder and preach in Bengal. Then people are saying, Vaishnavas today, hundreds of them, even thousands of them, they're saying, no, actually he was full sannyasi. Mahaprabhu told him, you give up sannyasi and become a householder. This is their liberalness. And then reaching to the stage of contamination. Very liberal in their thinking. See? So the liberal section has a danger that esoteric and those who want to see deeper, there's some danger there. You might see one, two things deeper in your life. Be happy with that. Don't try to go deep everywhere. Then you get onto this fast track of liberality and then you don't really know. And pretty soon you find yourself out of the graces of the truth and into some world of concoction and speculation. And the worst part about it is at that point you feel better than you've ever felt before. Because then you discover inspiration to live in a fool's paradise. When you're online, you're not always as inspired. Because progress is slow and many things are required from our side to pay the bill of Krishna consciousness. It's a hefty tab at the hotel, so to speak. It's a to swallow that one and pay that bill. Really, what is Krishna in the center? What is really love Krishna? All these things. So sometimes the life of a Madhyamadakari has got a lot of pain in it, a lot of austerity. There's disappointment. There are these things. Once you deviate and you get out of those guiding graces, then Maya is there to encourage you. And you get inspiration to live in that fool's paradise where you speculate so many things and go on. And therefore, you go to Govardhan Hill and places where you have groups of sahajiyas, and they'll be more fired up than some of the devotees in which is recognized as the Pakka line, parampara to Mahaprabhu. They'll be up earlier. I know some ashrams, they circumambulate half of Govardhan Hill and chant 64 rounds a day before they eat every day. But then they're thinking some defect in Lord Nityananda. They have some other aspect in the Leela of Krishna, which is Rasa Bhas, which is very unpalatable to Krishna, very unpalatable to Mahaprabhu, and any devotee, proper devotee in their line will find that very distasteful. And they find it so juicy and enthusiasm. So then what is this? Yes, this is the Maya. Maya also gives enthusiasm to move in the wrong direction. You see. So there is one side to become too rigid, to become dogmatic. There is another side to become too liberal, too accommodating, and fall into imitation, speculation about higher things. And honestly, my experience is if we can experience and understand a few, just a few, higher truths about Krishna in this life, we are so fortunate. Be happy with that. If you are taken somewhere very exceptional, into the company of someone very exceptional, and you are given, like sometimes, okay, I'll give a simple example. Sometimes we go somewhere, and we have our driver, and we drive out of Bangalore, and we go somewhere, and so we have to get something to eat, so we find some vegetarian hotel, and so we bring the driver, I'll say, bring the driver too, the guy must be hungry. And the restaurant is full, so he sits at our table, right? And he takes food with us, prasad, something. So then we get back to the ashram, Stein Sir Prasad, the guy just plops down on the line with the devotees. It's just like, what the hell are you doing here? I ate with you there. You showed me I mean, we're all equal. Yeah, we're all equal, but get your equal butt out of my seat. Go somewhere else. He misunderstands, right? If you treat your workers, your servants, we've had it here a thousand times, with too much love and too much affection, they think that's some weakness. They lose sight of the thing. Therefore, you've got to keep them at a certain distance. And sometimes the only thing they understand is harshness. And you drop all that, which I repeatedly do, and treat the servants like they were my own brother, and then they turn around and abuse that. They don't know that. Well, that's human nature. We're humans. And we're in this world. That nature is there. So if you come to something very, very high, you should go back from that, understanding, oh, that was something special. I revere that moment for my life. Not like, oh, I like another one. Give me another one. I'll have another one, please. And then you find yourself pushing your way in. And then it's not coming to you. You're trying to acquire that by your own endeavor. And it's something else when you finally get it. It's not the same. So we're not for pushing ahead. Raghunath Das Goswami is considered the Prayojana Acharya. And what does that mean? Yes, means I seek the position of the servant. I don't seek the position of a Manjari. I don't seek the position of a Shaki. I don't seek the position in Madhuryaras. I seek the most humble position as a servant. Then it, well, yeah, that was his mood on that day. And then I wrote an article once called, speck of dust. Yeah, what's the highest aspiration? Because everybody wants to know the highest. Well, the highest thing you can aspire for is to be a speck of dust at the lotus feet of not Krishna, not Mahaprabhu, but of the followers, not even Rupa Goswami, but of the followers of Rupa Goswami. This is our highest. And I got all these letters from devotees, even sannyasis. Well, Maharaj, appreciate the center, but actually we should aspire to be Manjaris. It's just like, you aspire to be a Manjari, you'll never be one. It's as simple as that. You don't want to pay the first entry ticket. You want to take the box office seat of the day, you know, which cannot be even achieved by people like Narada Muni. You, some guy from New York or Chicago or Bangalore, you want to take what even Narada Muni is afraid to run up and grab. You just want that. And it was bewildering. It was just showing the Vaishnava trend of the time, you know. Very unbecoming of Vaishnavism. They do not, our Acharyas and Mahaprabhu has not prayed in this way. Oh, make me a Manjari, Krishna. He told, take me as the dust of your lotus feet. And the Acharyas have magnified that. What does that mean in relation to us? And it's we seek to become the dust at the feet of the lotus feet of the followers of Sri Rupa Goswami. That dust we want. That dust we will become. Now one devotee's mother read that article and said, you have a strange religion. You want to become pieces of dirt. She says, no, Mom. Every piece of dirt there is Satchitananda Vigraha. Every piece of dirt. And anyway, anybody who comes to that desire, Krishna never makes them dirt. He makes them Manjari. He makes them Gopi. He makes them Gopa. That's the ticket. You want to go and purchase the wrong thing. You're grabbing the reflection. Mahaprabhu Shon, here's the ticket. Come to this desire. Come to this most simple And you know what it takes to get there? Because we don't really have that. But we know where the ideal is. Complete selflessness, no self-interest. I mean, it's as straw in the teeth. It's the lowest there is. So to actually accept the lowest there is, you have to empty the heart of all false ego, all material desire. Everything has to be gone, right? And when you are gone, you are just sucked up to Krishna, like through a straw, to so high you can go to fulfill the necessity of his service in any plane. Because you have that qualification. Mahaprabhu knew what is the best for the living entity. What is the highest they can achieve? What is the most expedient way to achieve that? What is the safest way to achieve that? And he has recommended this speck of dust. And Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta, who are the forefathers of our modern Krishna consciousness movement, and their followers, they have exemplified this. They have not given you aspire for these big, big, high things. Prabhupada just called it sense gratification. You aspire for these other things, it's sense gratification. No service mentality is there with you. People like to go to Vrindavan, like sit down with their beads these days and do Manjari meditation. If somebody says, can you help dress the deities? It's like, I'm doing Manjari meditation. And they sit with their beads and do Manjari meditation. If you want to be, say, a Manjari, you've got this thought, then you become Pujari. And do Pujari Seva all day long, because that's the closest as you're going to get to that kind of service in this life. And you're mentally serving it is what? Krishna already appeared in the deity form to accept bathing, dressing. You read, gopis are decorating Krishna's face. So someone wants to sit down with beads and just meditate on that, right? Well, join the Pujari department and you can actually do that. Long back, we had, 1,000 Tulsis growing here, 8 years ago? Till we couldn't even walk. There was Tulsi leaves everywhere, blowing everywhere. Right? But I used to say, you want to do Manjari Seva? Come here. You can cut Manjaris 8 hours a day, all the time, and never finish the job. This is Manjari Seva. And here we're like, what's he talking about? We're for the high Seva. It's not possible. That is not the high Seva. How to approach the higher world is everything we're seeing here is upside down. Everything is upside down. What we think is the highest is not so high. What we think is the lowest may actually be the highest. We may want to go in that direction. So that's clear. In our understanding, in Prabhupada's mission, in Sridhar Maharaj's preaching, in Sridhar Puri Maharaj's preaching, it is clear. Do not think yourself a purchaser of the higher dimension. Think yourself a beggar of the lower service. You are locked in. You are his team. You are tagged for that ultimate glory. Now, self-improve. Daily. Just go on. And not expect anything in return other than the opportunity of self-improvement. But what comes if people want something and it comes out? No, I want my bliss. Oh, you want. You want. You don't want a Krishna once you want your bliss. You want. It comes down to that. And there is none of us who can just stand and say, I have no want. I am doing just only what Krishna wants. First, we should try to understand that such a position is desirable and some of the fashion to adopt in order to achieve that. And Manjari meditation is not on the list. Considering that you know better than our previous acharyas, which are Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, and all Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, including our Prabhupada, that Nityananda actually was a sannyasi when they've all said that he wasn't. You are massively less intelligent and obviously bewildered in that fool's paradise. So, we should not try to read into more in Krishna's pastimes or Mahaprabhu's pastimes than what we are shown by our acharyas. And what we are shown has a definite purpose. This thing about Nityananda Sannyasi is totally playing into the hand of the sahajiyas. They just goes right behind that, and pretty soon every bubba's got his concubine. Every bubba's got his whore. Every bubba's at the whorehouse. Recently, that sahajiya from... Was it from Ireland? Not Ireland.
Oh,
Amsterdam, Holland.
Yeah.
He's been jostling with Gaudiya Vaishnavism for 10 years or more, right? joined the Radhakund Babas, Sahajiya. And, you know, many of the Gaudiya criticisms when those arguments would take place and things like that in articles on the internet. And these articles took place before any of us were born here. They took place in the 1915s, the same arguments, the same things were going on in print in the time of Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta. Then you got this like downtime, this dead period where both fractions are just going on with it. And there became a new confrontation a few years ago. And there was this one guy, what was his name, Advaita or something? He defending the Radhakund Babas like anything. And just like 3-4 weeks back, he came out on the website and said, actually, he hated to admit it, but this criticism of the Gaudiya Mutt, he finally came to know is true. All those Babas have prostitutes. Keep women and all nonsense is going on there. He finally came out and admitted it. He didn't admit that the principle of Siddha Pranali and all that meditation was wrong, but he did admit that the moral standard of these people was wrong. Okay. Well, the two are connected. You see, the two are connected. Because when you go to Madhurya Ras and you are not fit for that, then simply lust is all that you cultivate. And your mind, whoo, that's a tricky thing. The hypnotist can convince you. Have you ever seen anybody really hypnotized and think they were a chicken? Or think that everybody else was a chicken? And that's just the mind. The mind can be placed under control. And the mind is under control. It's just a matter of who's going to control the mind. And most of us are not going to control our mind. We're going to either submit it to Maya, or we're going to submit it to Krishna's agent. We're going to come under a way of thinking, which controls the mind, which is coming from Krishna and the parampara, or we're going to submit to Maya's influence, whatever they may be. So these people spend their life on Madhurya Ras, but they cannot conquer that lust, and that is what crops up. And then they have to keep repeatedly just fulfilling that lust and fulfilling that lust. And then they rationalize what it is and how it is. So important it is to see what the Supreme Lord has given in his Leelas Mahaprabhu and see what the Acharyas have given. And some time, place, and circumstance is there. But we should not think that we can turn them upside down and turn our back and just say, well, we're in a different time now. None of that matters. That's a big mistake. Any adjustments. Time, place, and circumstance mean with great care and contemplation an Acharya makes an adjustment, time, place, and circumstance. He doesn't go, hey, we're in a different time and place now, let's let it all rip, throw out everything, just create a whole new thing like that. Not like that. Very slowly. Prabhupada's time, place, and circumstance, once we analyze, it came down to one thing. You know what it was? He only did one thing in his whole mission that was different than what he had learned from Bhaktisiddhanta. Sannyasi performed the fire yajna for getting people married. That's the only thing that he did that was different. Everything else he did was the adjustment of Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta. They made the adjustment. And that one little thing he mentioned, actually this one thing I did was different. It was at the time, there was nobody else. The first fire yajnas, including getting devoted people married, because they weren't married, they were living with each other. He was like doing everything, getting Harinam, the second initiation, you two get married. He was trying to civilize what was in front of him. And there was no Grihastha Brahman to sit and do the yajna, so a sannyasi performed the yajna for a marriage. And after that, probably it happened many times even after that. Otherwise, his time, place, and circumstance was actually that and that only. Everything else was following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So we should think how many things we want to change. Particularly in the realm of understanding, philosophy, he changed nothing at all. And some of these people out here are just changing everything arbitrarily. They've changed so many things. It's like they are now sailing on the ocean or the boat, and on a boat, which I say doesn't even have a bottom on it. And when they wake up to that and the bubble pops, it's going down. Even those who strictly follow sometimes go down. What to speak of those who don't? So our interest in Gadadhar Pandit is foremost that he has been selected, or not selected, he has been recognized by those with the eye to see to be the foremost lover of Mahaprabhu. Means he has the greatest love and the greatest feeling for Mahaprabhu, the greatest surrender, is shown to us, surrender to Mahaprabhu, even greater than that of Nityananda or Advaita. The surrender and the intensity of the love of Gadadhar is worshipped by all the above. He is single most. And then ontologically, how can not be? He is Radharani. Huh? He is Radhabhav. He is that aspect of Radharani. Certain aspect, it is incarnate there in the company of Mahaprabhu. It must be. Balaram, he's Nityananda. He's mainly in Sakiras, some Madhurya Ras, older brother also having some Vatsalya sentiments. Huh? He's not in Balaram. Nityananda is not in the Madhurya Ras per se, like that. Actually, even Lord Balaram, he doesn't have Madhurya Ras. When he acts in Madhurya Ras, he's simply acting like Krishna. It's inconceivable. He simply takes the mind of Krishna and dances with the gopis and transfers it all to Krishna. But since Madhurya Ras is so sweet, then he becomes the sister of Radharani, Ananga Manjari. And that's how he gets into Madhurya Ras. But as Balaram himself, he's in Sakiras. And some Vatsalya. So we think and remember Gadadhara in that way. The greatest devotee, the most surrender. Once when Srila Puri Maharaj was asked, but why you worship Gaura Gadadhar? As if he was doing something different. Where actually installing many Gaurini Thai, that was a little different. Because Bhaktisiddhanta installed more Gaura Gadadhar than Gaurini Thai. And always we're seeing with our limited experience. And sometimes going to the highest devotees with our limited experience and posing our big, big questions. And sometimes almost challenging them. One man came to Prabhupada and said, why you don't have tilak? Prabhupada said, because I am Paramahansa. He just scared the guy out of his room in Vrindavan. Yeah, we're a lower devotee. We should have tilak when we come for darshan and put tilak. Higher devotee doesn't have to put tilak. He may or may not, but he's not doing this practice of sanctifying himself. He's already sanctified. In fact, Krishna feels sanctified to see him. So Srila Puri Maharaj said, because if we do not worship, if you do not worship Gaura Gadadhar, you cannot understand what is Radha and Krishna. So then that was like, because that devotee was from ISKCON, as most of us were, and hardly ever heard about Gaura Gadadhar other than in Panchatattva. And now we were told, you cannot understand Radha and Krishna unless you worship Gaura Gadadhar. So that devotee's head was like chopped off and rolling down the steps. He didn't know. Because then, all these things. Luckily, Prabhupada has mentioned you should worship Gaura Gadadhar or Gaurini Thai. Otherwise, some people wouldn't even accept that you could worship Gaura Gadadhar, despite Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta. So what does that mean? Nobody who worships Gaura Gadadhar can understand, who doesn't worship them, understand Radha Krishna? No, it doesn't mean that exactly. But yes, there is a plane where if you have attraction to Radha Krishna in Vrindavan Leela, genuine, then simultaneously your attraction for Gaura Gadadhar will increase. It will awaken and increase. You may favor one or you may favor the other. Some devotees favor one, the other, and some show a balance of both. But they are non-different. Gaura Gadadhar is Radha Krishna. And Radha Krishna is Gaura Gadadhar. But that will only be of significance to us in a higher plane. So why Keshava is worshipping Gaura Gadadhar? Why are we doing so many things? Because we are doing as hand of our guru. We do not think we are worshipping Krishna. We think our guru is worshipping deity, and we are simply his extended hand. And I am thinking, I am not worshipping deity. My guru is worshipping deity. And my guru also not thinking he is worshipping Krishna. He's thinking his guru is worshipping Krishna. And this is parampara. And when that thinking breaks, then the parampara is broken. Just to shout down the atheist or some non-believing devotee, a Paramahansa may claim, I am Paramahansa. That's the exception. And that's for a particular reason. Otherwise, Anyone who claims to be a Paramahansa is bogus. That's first criteria. He claims to be Paramahansa, he's bogus. Because that I am and greatness is completely absent in the pure devotees of Krishna. It is only rarely, rarely shown. I mean, Mahaprabhu is a devotee, but sometimes he took the form of Nisringadeva and chased people down the street. But then that was like, whoa, 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 that doesn't work. You can't do that. That doesn't work. That just, it comes out. That abhiman, assertiveness, comes out. It came out of him, and he proclaimed, I will kill all the meteors in the world. And he roared like Nisringadeva. Even his own devotees ran away. We asked Prabhupada certain questions. Can you see Krishna? Because we grew up hearing, God is dead, no one can see God. And Christians preach, no one can see the face of God and live. That's preaching, Krishna. So then along came Krishna consciousness and Prabhupada. So questions came up. Can you see? Can you see? And Prabhupada's standard answer was yes, 24 hours a day. But when he came to India, it wasn't always that same kind of, yes, I do. You say God is dead? You say God has no face? I have seen. No, you have not seen, but I have seen. He would preach very aggressively like this. And once in Hyderabad, some boys from the college said, Swamiji, have you seen Krishna? It was like, here we go with the standard, how many Swamis are asked this? And then they tell, yes, I am seeing Krishna in the fields, and I am seeing Gita and Krishna playing flute. And so many bogies get this question, huh? So Prabhupada said, do you think we are fools? There were nice college boys, but he goes, you are thinking we're fools? No, Swami. He said, do you think all these foreigners here, there was like five or six of us, you think they are fools? No, Swami. You think they are fools? They're coming here. They're spending their life. They're living this temple. They're giving their time. They're giving their money. They're sitting down here and they don't see Krishna? No, Swami, we don't say that. Then Prabhupada said, do you want to see Krishna? Yes, Swamiji, we want to see Krishna. You come tomorrow morning, 4:30, Mangalarti. Krishna is there. Where you'll begin to see Krishna, there. And then lastly, everywhere. And most importantly, in the Vaishnavas. Where we will find Krishna most accommodating, most embracing, most merciful. Everything most is actually in the Vaishnavas. That is where Krishna lives. He lives in the heart of the devotees. He even says, I am not, I am not in Vaikuntha, I am not in Vrindavan. I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. I'm where my pure devotees sing my glories. So where devotees are, that's what's going to be going on. Harikatha, chanting the names, speaking about Krishna, these things. That is where Krishna takes his seat. He takes his seat there. He is present there. Mahaprabhu had reached to a point, he had entered Krishna Lila at one time in his trance. His body was falling down. Was that on the ocean? I can't remember where, but he's showing extreme, extreme physical symptoms of his samadhi, dislocation of his joints, the sweating of blood, eyes rolled back, all these things, like scary, completely scary, just gone from the world. And he's picking flowers with the gopis to serve Radha and Krishna. And he's in that plane of consciousness. He's entered the Leela of Krishna, and one kirtan is going on by Srut Damodar and the devotees by his side in this world. And gradually he came back. And then he told the devotees, I was there. He described where he was. He said, but I heard some peculiar sound, some noise. You were all making this noise. And I came back. So the purport is twofold. One is for the holy name. Mahaprabhu left the relish of picking flowers with the gopis to serve Krishna. He left that relish, that pastime of relish, that pastime of service. He left that to come back to that place where the holy name was being chanted without offense, purely being chanted. That was Sri Damodar Haridas Thakur, so many Govinda, so many people were at that kirtan, maybe even Rupa Goswami, so many people were at that kirtan. So that's one purport. That the holy name is even more relishable to Mahaprabhu than the Leela of Krishna. Because everything is in the holy name. Even the Leela of Krishna is in the holy name. Everything we give in one, there. And the other one is, we should consider our chanting personally to just be a noise. And we should approach the holy name humbly and chanting with the Vaishnavas like, actually, we're a disturbance. Well, you can't do too much like that. It'll spoil your service. You know, everyone goes, what's wrong with you? Oh, I'm a disturbance, you know. It's like, yes, you are, but we want you to disturb today and be here. Disturbance. There's some mood. Humility has to be genuine. Artificial humility is a disturbance. And real humility, well, that is great wealth. That is great wealth. So, where to go? Enthusiasm. Utsayan. Enthusiasm is required. Earnest enthusiasm to serve. Obedience and surrender. And affectionate dealings with the devotees of our clan. All these things. We're like, what do we... There's one thing that we're trying to get to, right? Okay? But it's like, that one thing is like a feast. What is a feast? A feast. Sometimes 100 ingredients necessary for a feast. Not one thing. I have gaudata. Huh? Oh, no. You know, it's like, you have atta, you need ghee, you need sabjis, you need sugar, you need milk products, you need so many things, you need saffron, you need other spices, varieties, all these things together. Then somebody who enters doesn't do anything, he makes horrible thing, unofferable thing, no feast. Somebody who knows enters there, all these things combining for that one ultimate thing which we're trying to achieve. So Krishna consciousness, we repeatedly hear, humility is most important, surrender is most important, affection with devotees is most important. And like, which one is most important? Why don't you just take them all and figure it out later on, which one? Huh? And sometimes, some high devotee who has achieved everything, he will say, serving the order of my guru is most important. Another one will say, what most important to me was association with the Vaishnavas. And that is why all those things are sometimes separately said, most important, most important, most important. But there are definitely things that are to be avoided. They are not to be concluded on the menu. Asat sangatiyag, non-devotees should be avoided. Speculation, deviation from the path of the previous charis, all those things should be avoided. And then we have some hope of success. So looking for the same kind of answers that we used to get from Prabhupada, those very assertive, like, yes, I have seen face to face, and you may also see, and give up your godlessness, and believe. That type of preaching against the atheist world. So they went to Sridhar Maharaj in 1980, something like that. They asked Sridhar Maharaj, have you seen Krishna? He said, no. They said, well, I mean, Guru Maharaj's like, really, I mean, have you seen Krishna? And he said, like, really, no. And then they said, but... you know, there's only a few of your disciples here. They were like pushing for like, pull down all the, whatever is there, like peel down the layers and just get to the inner heart of this Vaishnava and they will tell us he has seen Krishna. And when they finally got right, now they peeled it all down and he said, no, I have not seen Krishna. But I think I'm on the right path. And when he said that, I think I'm on the right path, it was just like a glow of light means, yes, this is, if he says he's seen Krishna, what the heck's that got to do with me? I haven't seen Krishna. What matters? Am I on the path? Am I on the right way? That's what matters. And he gave the answer that matters. And that's the answer to all the Vaishnavas, actually. And that's the real answer that Prabhupada didn't give. Means he gave this assertive thing to come out in the face of atheism and science and bewildered people who didn't believe there's a God anymore. In those countries, they're saying God is dead, God is sex, all this stuff. So it came out very assertively. That's so rare, don't expect to see it. And the next time you see it, probably mark it as false. Like our friend in Mathura. All these assertive things. False. This is not the standard. Real love hides itself. And that's the energy of who? That's the energy of Balaram. Balaram comes out and just smashes things. Nityananda comes out very assertively, very, very aggressively. Therefore, Prabhupada is considered Shaktivesha Avatar and the Shakti of Nityananda. Very assertive, very aggressive. But in most acharyas, that will not be there. It comes out like the Tirumangai Alwar. Whoa! That's assertive. You know, he didn't have an army of dacoits and rob everybody and shed no blood. Think about it. What, he just showed up and said, okay, give your money, there'll be no bloodshed? Well, then every war would be fought like that. No. I'm not giving my money. Then we fight. Definitely in his fighting, there was bloodshed. Probably people were killed. Now that's assertive. And I'm getting this money, and I'm taking it back, and I'm building this temple for Ranganath, right? Tillamangayalwar, right? Well, there have been people in history who tried to imitate that and simply went to jail. And one of them happened to have been one of my best friends in America. They thought that they could do anything, including robbing and stealing, including sanctioning murder for Krishna. But they misunderstood. We can do anything for Krishna means whatever Krishna asks you to do and wants you to do, you can do. It doesn't mean I can do anything for you, and therefore I kill somebody for you. You go, I didn't ask you to do that, so don't pin that thing on me. There's a difference. And a lot of times we think we can just do anything for Krishna. Steal other people's property, because actually it's Krishna. If Krishna wants you to steal their property, then you can do that. But where is that line of communication drawn? Where is that telegram? Where is that? That's a very serious thing. And sometimes it manifests in the extreme. Krishna wanted Yudhisthira to lie. I mean, that doesn't seem like a big thing, because in this world, everybody's lying. In the market, in the politics, it's lies. If you say, you're a liar, that's not an insult. It's not an insult to call somebody a liar. It's like in America, you're a rascal. It's like, rascal. But in old India, 30 years ago, in UP, Delhi, you call somebody a rascal. Whoa. That's heavy language. That's like calling them a bastard or something. Calling their mother a prostitute. That's heavy language. Now, rascal means what? Some mischievous little kid. You have another example of, is it Vrindavan Das Thakur says, anyone who doesn't accept Mahaprabhu, I kick on their face. I put boot in their face. And it's like, and then Kaviraj Goswami says, I humbly beg all of you, please come hear Mahaprabhu. So opposite. So Sridhar Maharaj said, the devotee says, why he's so extreme? And he said, because there are cases that are so extreme. And then the devotee will act so extreme, then the person who has received that extreme abuse from the devotee, then he may turn to Krishna. This is your man. This is your man. He's abused me in this way. And this way the devotee will cause Krishna to enter and show some favor to this person who's out of the reach of the normal canvassing propaganda and such and cannot be reached. He will create a situation to bring Krishna to save him. So, but those extremes, they are just that. We shouldn't just abuse people. Prabhupada sometimes, I kick on face of scientists, right? So when the BI goes out to preach, the worst book that they can give people is called the one called Life Comes From Life. Now you were there on the conversations, and Prabhupada is kicking every 3 minutes on head of scientists. Man, he's stomping on them, right? So then some devotees printed this book and would go to colleges and give it to scientists. Is that the way to approach the scientist? That's a very extreme case. Prabhupada is talking only to devotees. He's not saying, now take this message and go kick on head of scientists. Rather, years later, he arranged the BI, he made this conference in Vrindavan, he put them in a hotel, he gave them good food. And all of you learned gentlemen, please come here with your great knowledge and examine this Krishna consciousness. Nicely, he invited them, so many scholars came, and they've been so many things after that. And that book is never distributed by a devotee who's preaching science, because it just insults the scientist. But to a person who's under the crush of science, that book gives some maybe relief. You know, someone is coming, hit our enemies smack in the face, driven them back. That's also required. But that's extreme. Mostly, you can't get away with that. You can't get away with that. If I'm a foreigner in this land, I cannot criticize Mahatma Gandhi. It's as simple as that. Period. And it has nothing to do with my age. I will be a foreigner till I die. I cannot criticize Mahatma Gandhi. If I'm an Indian, I rake that guy over the coals up and down, sideways and backwards if I want. I'm an Indian. I have another right. And therefore, some people wonder why Prabhupada didn't smash Christianity when he went to America. Because he had no right to. It is not intelligent to come from a foreign country and smash the religion of some country. So he tried to see in it some good, and make some accommodation. But about Hinduism, boom, boom, nonsense. What are you, Hindu? What is it? Nonsense, hodgepodge, kitchery. I mean, he was just like, he even said, somebody said, Swami, do your disciples, they go to Ramakrishna? He said, my disciples will not even go there for pissing, he said. That's right. But when he went to America, we went to meet this preacher. He's preacher. Oh, sir, yes, your Bible. Accommodation. There's some, like, don't forget, you know, there's such things as just common behavior, and there's a way to do things. But on his own, wherever he found an Indian in foreign country, he called them big pig. He said, big pig swims the river to eat the stool on the other side, and little pig stays at home. I guess he'd seen in Jamuna some big pigs could swim across and eat the stools on the other side. But little pigs just, they sit at home, right? So, and who went? They didn't go for preaching. They all went for sense gratification. Now, due to his movement, a lot of people who went for sense gratification have made a roll back in their Krishna consciousness, and that's not the issue. But it's a fact. Who goes foreign first? The big pigs for sense gratification. They don't go for the preaching. Nobody, practically. Bon Maharaj went once, I think, twice to Canada, came back after some, you know, like lecture tour, college thing. Vivekananda, he doesn't even count. Nobody went. All went for sense gratification. But you can't go out into the world. You go to America, you meet the Indian population, call everybody a big pig. What will happen? Then how you get them towards Krishna? So just because he said it doesn't mean you can repeat it. You see, there are situations that you have to take into consideration. Okay? All right. No premium in the year.